I'm Jessie Johnston Hill, and I'm one of the owners of First Light Farm over in the Big Eddy. Lived in Revelstoke since off and on since 2008, and finally got to start this farm in 2020.
I'm talking to you because you do a fundraiser for the food bank. Tell me about how that works.
Yeah, so every year since we started, we basically started a crowdfunding campaign using GoFundMe as the platform to raise funds that pay for our food to grow so that we can grow a significant amount to bring continuously throughout the growing season to the food bank. Before they moved to their new location, they had really limited storage capacity. So bringing manageable amounts of food that are perishable, that can be distributed in one or two visits or openings of the food bank then to clients is really helpful for them to add to their food recovery program that is usually less than fresh produce that comes from grocery stores that would otherwise be going to the landfill because it's not saleable for full price. So the food recovery program picks that all up, brings it back to the food bank, and sorts it from compost to animal food to human consumption grades, and then distributes it from there. And there's lots of still really great stuff. Just it's a real treat to have really fresh, locally grown produce, and the organic is just another perk that's really appreciated by clients and food bank staff and volunteers.
You said you've been doing this since you started. So what year did you start?
So we started in 2020, like right when COVID hit, kind of kicked us into gear. I've been dreaming about owning a farm for more than a decade. I just never really committed to it. Didn't want to tie myself down, but COVID was a great excuse to just be like, why am I not doing this already? We started it that year, and I think we raised about $3,000 or $4,000 that first year. And then the next year in 2021, we raised $8,000. Last year was a bit down. We raised $4,000. And then this year we're up at just about $3,000 today. So, and we just opened it a week ago. So it's looking good. Our goal is $10,000, but that's a lofty goal and that's a lot of food to bring. So that would take some extra work, but we're planning on it and we'll see how much we can raise.
And you said you want to raise enough money to grow a significant amount of food over the summer. Can you give us a sense of, it's hard to like, to give volume, but how much food you grow for the food bank? Let's say you get $5,000. How much food is that?
That's a good, it totally depends on the product, but we try not to just bring like delicate greens, although that's a real treat there, because most greens that come from the grocery store are quite old by the time they make it there. But we try to bring heavy stuff too. We have lots of potatoes and carrots and beets, so it's hard to put a number on that. But we try to bring, like, knowing that they're regularly serving 700 households in 2022, which was up from 300 the years before. We try to bring a good quantity in terms of maybe we'd bring 20 bunches of carrots and 20 bunches of beets and 40 pounds of potatoes or 40 bags of greens, you know, like some enough that the lineup of people outside can hopefully each grab something from the farm, if not something of each that we bring. We try to bring a good assortment, like lots of tomatoes and peppers when they're in season, and good variety.
And I mean, talking about quantifying the value of food through money, we all know that the cost of living has gone up and the price of groceries have gone up. Does that affect how much your food costs? Like, do you raise your prices to the kitchens that you sell to with the increased cost of food?
Yeah, we haven't in the last, we know that raising prices is hard to do. So we started high. We were higher than the other farmers in the valley, just for certain products. So last year we didn't raise our price from our first to our second year. We raised our bulk prices of our greens because that's the thing that we do the most for restaurants, and for the market and locals. But yeah, this year we might have to raise it up. Just the cost of soil amendments is going way up, and pots for transplants and the soil, like the peat moss and soil that goes in there. Just materials like that. And we're not dialed in enough to really know our production costs for each crop, because that takes some really detailed record keeping and number crunching. But every year our record keeping gets better and tighter, so we can start to really figure out those costs. But we try to not raise it much, and keep our own costs low.
When you say soil amenities, is that like fertilizer?
Yeah. So like feather meal or peat moss in the potting mix, like gypsum helps bring our calcium levels up. All those costs are climbing significantly. And then luckily for us, we just hire two people. Last year was our first year with employees, and this year we're doing two employees as well. Just a little bit longer of a season for them. And we get help with those wages. So we pay quite a bit higher than minimum wage and most farms in BC. And so that cost would 100% fall on us. But luckily we have the Columbia Basin Trust wage subsidy for food producers that really helps. They cover the minimum wage and then we top it up from there. So it's a living wage for our employees for the seasonal job that it is. And, that helps keep our food prices lower as well. Otherwise I'm sure we'd really be feeling the crunch. Yeah. So we're kind of buffered living here.
And we're standing on your farm right now. It's a nice bright sunny day. I'm kind of blinding you cause I have to have my back to the sun, but there's a lot of snow on the ground still. When do you expect to start planting, to start growing things?
I'm trying not to measure the snow every day right now because we're way behind. But we're kind of under, we told our first employee that she could start the week of April 17th, which is next week. And we still have 50 to 70 centimeters of snow across the field. It's starting to go quicker now. So I think by late next week, we could actually provide a day of work, but if we don't have to, we'll push it back a week. And then we can start doing tasks that are kind of before getting anything in the soil, like getting plastic on greenhouses and setting up a couple new greenhouses, and just getting ready for when the snow is gone and we just have to start running, really, because we're so behind on snow melt this year.
You can tell the people who are in town who are gardeners, because all the grass that the snow has melted off of, it's all raked. And they're just like doing everything they can because they can't dig in the dirt yet.
Yeah. I mean, the COVID year was the best for that. Everyone was like, okay, well, we're stuck at home. Let's start gardening in March. And beans were planted way too early and all kinds of crops that couldn't handle the cold temperatures, and gardens got planted a bit too early because we were so eager. But yeah, I mean, everyone's just seeing the longer sunny days and we're just ready to get our hands in the dirt. It's not really in our benefit to start shoveling the snow because there's nowhere to really put it here. And if you clear one area, we kind of need the whole area cleared so that we can plant everything at once. We don't just have one crop of arugula at the first farmer's market and then nothing for a couple weeks. So we just have to wait for everything to be quite nearly melted before we start putting things in the ground. Yeah, for now, everything's growing. All our transplants are growing in our living room under lights. Can't wait to get them out of the living room, and they're getting quite big because they were all planned to be planted April 24th, because that's when we planted the last 2 years in the greenhouses. But this year it's a week at least behind, maybe two.
And so when you do get rolling on your fundraiser and giving the food to the food bank, is that every week of the summer?
Yeah, so we try, it kind of depends on how much we raise. Last year, with it just raising $4,000, we really had to pace ourselves. So we maybe only made one delivery once a week, but the year we raised 8,000, then we were able to bring it like 2 to 3 times per week throughout the season. It's nice to be able to go often. It's really fulfilling to drop it off and get so much appreciation for the food and make the tables look so much nicer and full of abundance. It really looks like a farmer's market in there when it's got lots of produce. And people are really psyched to get great food. Yeah.
And you talked about how it's fulfilling, but why is it important to you to donate to the food bank? It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I think it's really, the farmer's market is known for having high prices and not being accessible to everyone in our community. Even though these days, with the cost of food really evening out, in the grocery store to the farmer's market, it's often you get good deals at the farmer's market because we have this awkward pricing system where we have to deal in whole numbers and not per pound or per ounce because we don't have the time to keep customers rolling through. So you have to just say, a head of broccoli is $5, even though at the grocery store you might be paying $6, but you don't realize it unless you look at the receipt. It's just a way to get our produce accessible to everybody. There is a really great BC Farmers Market initiative where they give out coupons at the food banks for families and low-income neighbors of ours that can use those coupons as cash at the farmers market and get just produce, fish, honey, meat, dairy products. And it's a really great help, but it's also really nice to bring it to the food bank where a lot of people might not make it to the farmer's market with those coupons. There's a really great book called The Stop that is about a food bank in Toronto that became a community food hub, and they really changed the way a typical food bank was running. With a hamper system of you show up as a client, you get what you get, and that's what you have to eat. You don't get any choice and you don't feel much pride going there. And our food bank is modeled after that now. It's like a shopping experience. You walk through and you take what you want and however much of each that you want and get a good diversity and get to eat what you want with whatever's there. So the book, The Stop, is this community food hub actually partners with a farm back there called The New Farm. And that new farm ends up hosting a really big fundraiser each year. And they have the advantage of being just outside of a huge hub like Toronto. And they get big name bands, like they had the Tragically Hip play, and they had all these amazing chefs come to the farm and do sort of food truck style meals with food from the farm. And it raised tons of money for the community food hub to then also support the farm and other farms and just raise the local food system up as well as improve the food bank system.
So that's
kind of what our goal, it's inspired after that. And we would love to start hosting fundraisers here. We're just not there yet with the property. We just got the property 2 years ago. So it still has lots of hazards that we need to deal with. And we have really close neighbors too that have all been super supportive. And so we want to navigate that really quickly and, or carefully, not quickly. Yeah, the opposite of quickly, and feel it out. Yeah, we've only had one little music event here, and it was Denny and Myra, a super chill little 50-person guerrilla gig event, and that was awesome. But it really impacts the neighborhood if there's a ton of cars and people showing up and noise. And so, yeah, one day we'd like to figure out some type of fundraiser like that. For now, it's limited to GoFundMe and whoever we can reach there. But yeah, one day. Maybe it's at this location, maybe it's not, but we'd love to involve all the chefs that work with us regularly. There's some really great chefs, and it's such a cool community, the food community here. So
how long will your GoFundMe be open?
It's open all season. Yeah, it's helpful to raise the bulk of it early season so that we can really plan for if we did raise $10,000, then we really need to get a lot of successions in the ground and bump production up more than what we anticipate restaurants to be using. So it just helps to plan, and it helps. It's another model of community-supported agriculture where it's as if you're buying a membership to a box program where we give you your weekly veggies, except you're giving it to our neighbors at the food bank that are using it regularly. So we found in our first year, people who have small families were like, oh, well, we really want to support your farm more, but, you know, we can only buy greens and broccoli, and so I can only eat so much this week. And it kind of kickstarted the idea more, like, here's a way you can support our farm and the food bank and not have to eat all that food in 1 week yourself. So, yeah, it's a great, I don't know, it feels a little niche, I think.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How can you donate?
So if you want to find our GoFundMe campaign, just go to the GoFundMe website and type in First Light Farm fundraiser, and you'll see First Light Farm to Food Bank fundraiser. That's the name of it. Or you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, and we have the link there. And we'll be posting it here and there. We don't want to shove it down people's throats, but if you'd like to find it and contribute $20, $5, $100, it all goes towards more food going to the food bank from us. So please find it.